chair, but I'm going to.
Today is Thursday, January 17th, 2019. The time is 9:35. I wanted to give people a couple extra minutes to get here. It's January, our first meeting together of the year. Thank you all for being here. This is a meeting of the Regional Growth Committee at Wasatch Front Regional Council. I am Mayor Ramsey of South Jordan, and I'm filling in since the chair of this committee is now in Washington, D.C. So with that, I'm going to turn some time over to Andrew Gruber, Executive Director here at Wasatch Front Regional Council, for some introductions.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And the only reason I'm talking now is just provide a little bit of explanation for Mayor Ramsey sitting in the role that she's in. As you mentioned, the chair of this committee was Mayor Ben McAdams, now Congressman Ben McAdams. So he is not with us, of course. And the way that WFRC does its selection of chairs and vice chairs is that we have a nominating committee made up of folks from around the region, and they will make recommendations or nominations to the full Wasatch Front Regional Council, which meets 1 week from today at 2:00, January 24th. That nominating committee is going to nominate Mayor Ramsey to be the chair of this committee. So congratulations, I think. I hope.
Maybe premature.
Okay. And so, what the current chair of our council, Mayor Caldwell from Ogden City, asked Mayor Ramsey, given the expectation that she'll be the chair going forward, asked her to step in right away and run this committee. So that's just by way of introduction. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And then if we do. Yeah.
We have a lot of familiar faces here, but as always, it's January and there's always exciting change that takes place too. Regardless, we'd like to go around and can we start over here and have everybody just tell us really quick who you are and who you represent?
Gary Urest from the city of Dr. Elvis Cross, representing the Leaders Against Pets.
Amy Winter Newton, Salt Lake County Council.
Laura Hansen, I'm with the Utah Transit Authority.
Terry Newell, Utah Department of Transportation.
Dan McConkey, Commissioner of UDOT.
Bob Dandelway, Roy City.
Jim Harvey, Commissioner of Weaver County, alternate.
Mark Allen, Washington Terrace City, Weaver County.
Ivan Marrero with the Federal Highway Administration.
Dave McCarlson, Old City.
Jim Ridey, West Jordan.
Ted Knowlton, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff.
John Ramsey, South Jordan City.
Andrew Gruber, WFRC.
Len Arvey, City of North Salt Lake.
Bill Summercorn, Salt Lake County, representing Utah Association of Counties.
Ari Maroon, Division of Utah.
Katie Gerard, Wasatch Front staff.
Evan Curtis, Governor's Office of Management and Budget.
Ron Bigelow, West Valley City.
Jeff Scott, Monticello County Commission.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here, and thank you to everyone else who's here as well.
Could we have, would you mind having us have our staffs and the visitors introduce themselves as well?
I would love that.
Okay, thank you.
Chris Goldberg, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff, Community Economic Development Group.
Kip Billings, Wasatch Front.
Hugh Van Wagenen, Wasatch Front Long Range Planning Group.
Alex Gray, WFRC staff, Community Economic Development.
Dory Donner, Long Range Planning Group, but here at Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Jenna Garrison with Wasatch Front Regional Council and Long Range Planning Group.
Scott Hess, Wasatch Front Regional Council, Community Economic Development.
Megan Thompson, WFRC staff, Community Economic Development.
Ned Hacker with the Regional Council staff.
City staff and Port Government Relations Manager here with WFRC.
Roger Borgenick, Utah for Better Transportation.
Heather McLaughlin Cole, WFRC staff, Communications.
Russ Fox with Jersey City.
Jane Mandel, Federal Highway Administration.
I'm Jolene McConkey, and I come and visit. It's such a great meeting. I love to dance.
She's my chauffeur.
Steve Call, same thing.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. I agree. This is a great meeting. We've had a great meeting here. Okay, first item on our agenda action item is to approve the minutes from our October 11th, 2018 meeting. Does anybody have any comments? Did everybody have a chance to take a look at the minutes? Any questions?
Move to approve the minutes.
We have a motion and a second, and I don't know who takes note of that. You're the one taking note of that.
Can I see who is the second again?
Mayor Iding.
And who made the second?
Councilmember McCall.
Thank you. Any discussion to this? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from the October 11th, 2018 meeting, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, next is the opportunity for public comment. Is there anybody here who would like to speak to this body?
If you need a packet, I do have a couple packet handouts. Anybody would like one?
Is there anyone that would like to address this body? Okay. Seeing none, we will close the public comment portion of this meeting and move on to number three, an update on our Wasatch Choice 2050 and the 2019 through 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. Since we've not met since October, we have a few new people. It's a good idea probably to recall the Wasatch 2050 vision dovetails a long-range plan for regional transportation with local visions for growth and economic development. This vision has been developed collaboratively with member communities and transportation partners over the last 3 years. And we're going to turn some time over to Julie Bjornstad here with WFRC to discuss the final draft.
Okay, thanks. Yes, I'm in control. Okay. So one of the guiding principles here at Wasatch Front is that we achieve better outcomes by working together. And this is not only true with you guys as our communities and our partners, but also in our work products. That is why when we're developing our Wasatch Choice 2050, which is our blueprint for the future, how we want to grow, we don't only talk about transportation, but we integrate that with economic development and land use. The regional transportation portion of the Wasatch Choice 2050 is our regional transportation plan, which I'll talk to you more about in a second. The economic development component is our SEDS, or our Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, which is developed in partnership with our Wasatch Front Economic Development District. Some of you may be a part of those, or your communities may attend those meetings. And then the land use is your local land use plans. The Wasatch Choice 2050 vision, like I said, outlines that blueprint for growth from Box Elder County down to Utah County, from Tooele over to Morgan. It was developed in conjunction with the RPOs and the MPOs in the area, with our partners, our communities, UDOT and UTA, for instance. And so one of the main tenets of the vision is that where growth occurs matters. We want to be linking our land use and our transportation areas. So we started with regionally significant centers and districts. These are defined by our local communities, and they're areas of walkable concentration with businesses and residences. Also including employment, industrial, and special districts such as airports or universities. We tied those centers together using a regional roadway network of highways, freeways, and local streets such as arterials and collectors. Combining that with high frequency transit such as Front Runner, Trax, Bus Rapid Transit, and Core Bus, so bus service that's 15 minutes or more frequent. And then we tie that together with the backbone of active transportation, whether those are bike lanes or off-street trails. That all comes together to create the Regional Transportation Plan, which is an integration of our land use and our transportation. That development of the Regional Transportation Plan and the Wasatch Choice 2050 was developed using our Wasatch Choice 2050 goals. These were approved by our council in October of 2016 with approval from this body. If you ever forget what they are, for this meeting, they're back here. And then in the next meeting, we'll be in our new space, which I can't believe we got this far into our meeting without you mentioning the new space. And so they'll be on some other wall, I'm not sure which one. But our goals aren't only transportation related. We also talk about affordable housing. We talk about access to opportunity and, of course, air quality. So these are the guiding principles in the developing of our regional transportation plan. We've been working with you guys over the past 3 years through this process, where we explored our goals and scenarios for investment decisions. We chose a preferred land use and transportation scenario and how we wanted to grow into the future. And we've been working over the past year to prioritize and phase those needs, not only by need, but also when we thought revenue would be available to fund those projects. So, like I said, we've been working on the regional transportation plan. This is a document that outlines our investments in roads, transit, and active transportation. We need to update that at least once every 4 years, and that adoption will be this May. We use models as a technical basis for where we think traffic and transportation needs will be growing over the next 30 years. We are also required to financially constrain the plan, meaning we can only put things in that document that we feel like we can afford either with existing or assumed new revenue. And then we have to ensure air quality, so nothing in the plan can significantly worsen our air quality. Obviously, I don't need to tell you how important that is, but the past few weeks you've seen the inversion set in. We obviously don't want to worsen that. And then the document is divided into three phases. So we have what we can assume we can afford between now and 2030, between 2030 and 2040, 2040 to 2050, and anything we don't think that we can afford by 2050, but that is needed, is put into an unfunded phase, but still included within the document. So we are at the point where we have gone through all of those projects. We have about 1,000 projects between the road, transit, and active transportation sites. We've phased them based on need, and we financially constrained them based on the revenue we felt was available. And then we wanted to get your feedback and the public's feedback on those projects. So we had 7 phasing workshops throughout the Wasatch Front in October and November of last year. We had 260 elected officials and appointed officials, so whether that was mayors, county commissioners, planning commissioners, or city councils. And we invited staff from engineering, planning, and economic development. And so we received about 309 comments from those workshops. We also wanted the public to give us feedback, so we had an online interactive map where we had significant feedback also from there, 145 comments. And then we had stakeholder meetings with the Utahans for Better Transportation, with Rio Tinto, with SLR, PRI, the Church Holdings, and then followed up with local communities where needed. So we had about 450 comments. Those were not only on specific projects, but also in general, how we should grow, what types of transportation investments we needed. It just sounds like a lot of comments. There really wasn't that many comments. And some of those comments also were overlapping on the same project. So when developing the plan, I just wanted to go back to that connection between economic development, land use, and transportation. We've spent considerable time in two areas where we see that economic development and land use component really changing over the next 30 years, and that's the inland port area and the port of the point of the mountain. In the inland port area, we know that there will be more focus on freight. And so in that area, we made sure that we put in a regional transportation network that could support better freight at interchanges. So you'll see that there's some improvements on 201, for instance, improvements to interchanges at 56 West and I-80. We've grade separated a number of railroad crossings to make both the freight and surface freight and rail freight more efficient. And we've added some new roads such as 7200 West and a gridded network and the prison site to make those lands more available for development. At the point of the mountain, this site will be, we're already facing congestion in this area. With the prison redevelopment, there's of course going to be more demand for houses and businesses in that area. And we wanted to put a transportation network in that would not only support but also activate the area. So that includes the continuation of Mountain View Corridor, some new surface roads, as well as more enhanced transit and a more developed active transportation network. Okay, so this is where we are now. We've gone already out to public comment once. We've worked through those comments with our partners, whether that's UDOT, UTA, or the Mountain Land Association of Governments, to respond to those comments. We've refined our financial assumptions, whether that's project extents, project cost, or revenue assumptions. And now we're at the point where we're running that air quality conformity that I spoke of earlier. We're hoping to go back to public comment in February, just one last time to get feedback not only on projects, but also air quality conformity and our draft documents. In March, we'll come back to you with a recap of those comments and give you an overview of our forward-facing communications to the public, so whether that's our website or our website. In May, we'll come back out and ask you to approve a approve a recommendation that the council adopt a regional transportation plan. And then in August, after that adoption is completed, we'll come back out to you, talk more broadly about strategies for how to implement the Wasatch Choice 2050, as well as how we plan to monitor the progress of implementation and the benefits that we expect to receive from the implementation. And that's it. Any questions about the process or what is happening in the future? Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Ted.
I look forward to having you back in March.
Okay,
excited
thanks.
To hear what people say.
One quick comment, if I may.
Yes.
Part of the reason why we give you this level of detail is that the Regional Growth Committee is the place where you oversee, you steer the regional transportation plan. That's one of your roles is to fill that. And so you will make recommendations to council at the key milestones that Julie talked about.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, next is our legislative update and preview. We all know what time of year it is, right? Mm-hmm. So we are grateful to have Andrew and Lanise both here. Wasatch Front Regional Council staff works very closely with our government agencies and partners, and we're going to turn some time over for an update on where we're at with Senate Bill 136 the next year, you know, and
thank you very much, Mayor. So yes, as everybody knows, the legislative session is almost upon us. It begins on January 28th and ends 45 days later. As many of us know, while the legislature's in session, nobody's safe for that period of time. So we all have to be very mindful and be tuned in to what's going on, both to try to accomplish positive things and, candidly, to avoid bad things happening. And that's part of our role working with you, the WFRC, also with our partners at UDOT and UTA and GOMB and the League of Cities and Towns and the Association of Counties and all of our other partners being very involved in what's going on and Envision Utah and others. What we want to do today is give a little bit of a preview, talk about some of the key topics that we're anticipating are going to be discussed, are already under discussion at the Capitol leading into the session. But before we look ahead, we want to just take a few minutes to look back. Last year, you'll all remember, the legislature passed a landmark piece of legislation, Senate Bill 136, that we talked a lot about through WFRC here with all of you. What we want to do is take a few minutes, and in just a moment I'm going to ask Terry Newell from UDOT and Laura Hansen from UTA to give you an update on where their agencies are at in the process of implementing Senate Bill 136. You'll remember that bill emerged from a task force that met over the course of a year. It made changes in UTA governance. It created a new state fund that would have funds available for transit projects. It encouraged the increased integration of land use and economic development. And it made some modifications to local option sales taxes. Those sales taxes for transportation that are the counties in the state are authorized to implement. And I'll just give you a little update on the local option sales taxes, and then I'll turn to Terry first. Since last year, since the last legislative session, when Senate Bill 136 was adopted, there has been significant action that has occurred on the local option sales taxes. So Salt Lake County, the county working with their cities, implemented the so-called fourth quarter. That's not a calendar quarter, it's a quarter of a percent, 0.25%. Implemented that, tax took effect in October, and is now actually being allocated by the county for priority projects in Salt Lake County. Come July 1 of 2019, the standard distribution formula will kick in. So 0.1 of the 0.25 will go to the cities, 0.1 will go to UTA, and 0.05 will go to the county. So that's already moving forward. Then Utah County, also at the end of December, their county commission took action to impose the fourth quarter as well. So that's going to start in April of 2019. And then just 2 days ago, the Davis County Commission took action and implemented the so-called third quarter. That one has been authorized since 2007, but they took action and that tax will take effect on July 1 of 2019. Tooele County also imposed their third quarter a few months ago. And Councilman McCall is the chair of the COG there and is working on the process for the use of that third quarter. So we've seen a lot of activity on communities, the local government stepping forward and saying we need to generate these revenues to invest in transportation. I do think it's notable that with Davis County's action the other day, now all of the main Wasatch Front counties, the larger counties, Utah, Salt Lake, Davis, and Weber, have now all implemented all four of the so-called local option quarters, which add up to 1.05%. I know four quarters, 1.05, I'm not going to explain that right now. But you have a uniform tax rate of local options, sales taxes going for transportation in the main counties of the Wasatch Front, and then the other counties around Box Elder, Tooele, Morgan, and other counties are at varying levels, but still have those options to move forward. So in the line of work we do, we consider that to be very positive and progress. So if unless there's any questions about the local options, which I'm happy to try to answer, I'll turn to Terry and then Laura to please give us a little update on your implementation of Senate Bill 136.
This is where Andrew holds us accountable for getting our work done. So I
like that, Terry. Yeah.
I should tell you things, only three things for you to remember them, but I've got five and I'll go through them fairly quickly. One of the big things out of SB 136 was restructuring at UDOT to try to have us have more emphasis on planning. So it created the deputy director position, which I hold that title. It also created five new planning positions. So we have a new planner in place now at each one of our regions. So just to tell you the important ones for you guys at Wasatch Front is Andrea Olson in Region 1 and Grant Farnsworth in Region 2. So if you don't know them, you may want to get to know them. Our goal with that is so that we can have better connection to the communities and then try to understand, keep a little in touch, more in touch with what's going on and trying to make that relate to our transportation a little bit better. Just other changes in our department. Shane Marshall retired, so Jason Davis took his position, which then there also was another cascading effect in our department. So Lisa Wilson is now the region director for Region 1, and Carmen Swanwick, who was our former bridge engineer, took Lisa's position as deputy director in Region 2. So if you need to ask me afterwards, what did you do? I'm glad to talk to you. So that's all on restructuring. We have the road usage charge that we are working on. We know that gas tax is eroding as we have better mileage vehicles, alternative fuel vehicles, that we need to be looking long-term at other ways to collect funding for transportation. So we are looking at a usage-based system. We're looking at a voluntary program for alternative fuel vehicles that we will have operating in January of 2020. Most states start with a pilot, but we like to be aggressive in Utah, so we're starting with a full-blown program. So we have a request for information out right now to hire an account manager to handle those accounts when we start that program. Third thing I want to talk about is Utah's transportation vision. And we had a stakeholder meeting that Andrew was involved on your behalf. And we, Governor Herbert, welcomed everyone to that meeting and kind of set the stage for the discussion of a statewide vision for transportation. So we're continuing to work on what that means. One of the things that we looked at that meeting were we had a listing of all the documents that set goals for transportation in our state, and we were really trying to build on those documents and say what goals are most important. We kind of spun around on that for a bit, and I'll say the one thing that came out of that everybody could agree on is we need to have quality of life as a main theme. And I think there was a little shock value to the thought that the perception is that quality of life is eroding in Utah. And I think that kind of had everybody sit up a little bit and go, wow, none of us want that. So I think that gives us a good basis for a discussion going forward. So we are trying to put together a framework, and we'll have additional discussions leading up to having a technical team meet on that in February. And then fourth thing, quickly, prioritization process. So how we prioritize our transportation projects. We have hired a consultant. We have held workshops with all of our partners trying to get to a new framework for prioritization, and that we want to be ready by fall of 19 to be able to prioritize projects based on this new process. We're looking at roadway and transit independent initially, but then we're hoping we can find a way to look at across modes with that process. So continuing to work on that. And then just the last thing quickly, we are working with the new Board of Trustees for UTA on a study that we were asked to do to look at transition of UTA as a state agency, but that's a long-term look that it's just a study we were asked to take a look at. So we are starting on that now that we have the new Board of Trustees in place. Segue.
Thank you. So at UTA, we now finally have all three of our new trustees. We have Carlton Christensen from Salt Lake County. We have Beth Holbrook representing Davis and Weaver counties. And then we
have Box Elder.
And Box Elder, excuse me. Yes, I'm sorry about that. And then Kent Millington, who is representing Utah County and Tooele County. So we're excited to have them all on board. They have changed their meeting schedule where they're meeting every single week now as opposed to every month, which is great. They are really have a high focus on transparency, and they're wanting a lot of the conversations that would happen in other situations prior, having those now in the actual board meetings. And so there's a discussion item, and then the action typically happens in the meeting just following that. So I think that's a really good change. We also have our 9-member local advisory board established. They met for the first time yesterday, and they include representatives of all of the various different communities and regions in our service area. SB 136 gave authority to the local advisory board to approve all new TOD plans, all service planning decisions, and also capital development decisions. And so we have been working internally to create some kind of workflow flow charts that clearly articulate where those decision points occur within our processes, so that it's really clear to see, okay, this is the board's decision, this is the local advisory board's decision. And so we're in the process of finalizing those, and they should all be publicly shared here soon. Other changes, the Board of Trustees has done a little bit of reorganizing at UTA. SB 136, the way that it's written, we have an executive director, and then we have several executives. So formerly they were called vice presidents. We no longer have a president, and so those titles have been changed to chief, which makes sense. And so the legislation had the chiefs reporting directly to the Board of Trustees, and they've changed that and delegated that authority to the executive director. So the board directs the executive director manages the chiefs, which I think makes sense. Part of the reason for that is the board would very much like their role to be outward facing, really working on community engagement, relationship building, negotiations with the legislature, and then having this executive director be more inward facing, really focused on operations and making sure that the organization is running as efficiently and optimally as possible. So that's part of the reason for that change. In addition, they also created a new chief position. This is called the Chief Service Development Officer. And that office is taking bits and pieces of the agency and putting them together under kind of one organizational structure. So capital, TOD, and planning are all moving under this new executive, and we're currently in various different parts of the agency. A lot of that ties back to the role of the local advisory board. And then Terry mentioned the state agency's study, and then we have another study that was required, which was to look into having UTA's retirement move into the state URS system, and so that study is happening as well. And I don't know the details on that, unfortunately, but quick update.
Okay. Has anybody have any comments or questions for Terry or for Laura? I think you can tell that UDOT and UTA are both working really hard on implementing all of those provisions of the legislation, and we've been working really closely with them. So I feel like all of that is really moving in a positive direction. So thanks. Okay, so that was a little look back, and then briefly we'll do a little look ahead. And I'm going to turn to Lanice in just a moment, our government affairs manager. We'll hit on just a few of the key topics that are already under discussion. One of the things that SB 136 did last year is create another task force, because we love task forces in this state to study things, because, you know, who needs a summer, right? So there was another task force that was a transportation and tax review task force that met through the so-called interim period through the summer and has actually been meeting just up until very recently, and has produced follow-up legislation to Senate Bill 136. It's a 144-page bill in the current draft, and I'm not going to go over all the details. It is more technical in nature than Senate Bill 136 in that it does follow-up, but just briefly, one of the things that it does is it makes some modifications relating to those local option transportation sales taxes that I already mentioned. They're a little confusing. There's a whole bunch of them, and right now, there are different rules for the eligible uses for different quarters. So if you're a city or a county, the money that comes to you, I'm not talking about the transit money, but the money that comes to the cities and the counties, different quarters has different eligible uses. So what this bill would do would standardize the uses across all of those quarters, the eligible uses, and make them a little more flexible. So we think that's a positive thing. It doesn't change the allocations of funding, but it standardizes and makes more flexible the allowable uses of those funds. The bill also does make a few modest tweaks to the UTA and UDOT governance provisions. Notably, for the work that we do here, thinking about all the modes of transportation, it would authorize the capital funds that go to and through UDOT in their TIF program and the TTIF to be eligible for use for active transportation projects under prioritization procedures that would be developed by the Transportation Commission, Commissioner McConkie and his fellow commissioners, in collaboration with, obviously, with UDOT, and the MPO is working with them. So we think that's a really positive change. And this bill establishes some more detailed guidelines for the road usage charge program that Terry mentioned earlier. So we'll be paying close attention to that. Lanice sent out a legislative update, and it had a link to a one-page summary of that bill for those of you that want to dig into the details. Lanice, why don't you come up, please? There's one other legislative item which we'll talk about, which is actually the next item on the agenda, an appropriation. So we'll skip over that, if that's okay for right now, and then turn to Lanice to hit on some other key items, and then tell us, how is WFRC gonna work through the session?
Thank you. So I do wanna highlight Senate Bill 34. This is the Affordable Housing Modifications Bill. I'll touch on some of the relevant pieces that I think are important for you all at the local government level. And then, as Andrew mentioned, I'll touch on sort of logistically what you can expect from Andrew and I during the 45-day session that starts here on January 28th. Okay, so Senate Bill 34, this bill came out of the Commission on Housing Affordability. It's co-sponsored by Senator Jake Andrig and Representative Val Potter. One of the main objectives of the bill is that it really weaves together the planning elements that a city has to do when you create your general plan. So it weaves together the transportation, the land use, and the housing elements of a general plan. And let me talk a little bit about the specifics of that. So on the transportation side of things, cities must now consider land use when developing the transportation element, and the transportation element must now consider, in addition to roads and transit, active transportation. So we're excited about that. That's a big win for AT. Cities must also consider population projections and things like economic centers when looking at your land use section and the moderate income housing element of the general plan. Cities now also have a menu of options, is what they're calling it. It's a 15 to 20 menu of different things that you can do at the local government level that address sort of housing issues and opportunities. The idea there is if you select two of that list, then you report on how well you're implementing some of those items. Then you would be eligible for the state TIF and TTIF dollars, the Transportation Investment Fund and Transit Transportation Investment Fund. So that's a big deal. It's sort of one of the big incentives of Senate Bill 34. It also increases the one-time and ongoing appropriation to the Olene Walker Loan Housing Fund. I think I got that right. It's a trust fund. They're also changing the membership of that trust fund to sort of help identify what you can do with new money and then how you can distribute money that would go to moderate income housing. So it's a brief overview of Senate Bill 34. I provided another a summary that actually the Utah League of Cities and Towns developed in my governmental affairs email. I'm happy to send that around to anybody that may not be on that list. So maybe just raise your hand now or find me after the meeting, and I'm happy to provide you with that information. And then sort of logistically speaking, are there any questions on the Senate Bill 34 before I move on? Great. Okay, so let me talk quickly about the 45-day session and what you can expect from us. So we will send out emails probably at least weekly to all of our members and key partners, providing an update on what's happening. We will continue our Thursday morning meeting at the Capitol. So Thursday mornings, 8 a.m. It's a recurring meeting. Our first one will be January 31st in the Aspen Room of the Senate building. So please mark your calendars and plan to attend that. We will continue to track important bills related to transportation, air quality, housing, economic development, and related bills. So we have a bill summary, bill tracker, that we'll keep up to date. We've already sent that out. We're still working on that. Katie Girard is going to be helping with some of the legislative affairs this session, so we're happy to have Katie. And then finally, I think it's just important to know that Andrew and I will continue to be actively engaged in the session, continue to be a resource to you. So if you have any questions or if you want more information on anything that's happening up on the Hill, please reach out to us. That's what we're here for.
I just want to note, we work very closely with, as Lenny said, with the League of Cities and Towns and the Association of Counties on issues like housing, which aren't the predominant role for WFRC, but we all know that transportation and housing and economic development and air quality all relate together. So we're working in partnership with them, and also work really closely at the Capitol with UDOT and UTA particularly. So you can turn to any of us, but it takes full commitment, as everybody knows, during that brief session. It's mercifully brief, but it's very intense. So, yeah, can we make one mention of what's going on nationally before we move off of the legislative update?
Absolutely.
What's going on nationally, well, or what's not going on, as the case may be, have you noticed that we don't have a budget? We have a shutdown. Ivan Marrero is here from the Federal Highway Administration, and thought it might make sense for him to just take a moment to explain to you what does that mean, the fact that there's a federal shutdown, mean for transportation in Utah. The good news is it doesn't mean as much as it might otherwise, because most of the transportation, federal transportation programs are funded through the Highway Trust Fund, but it does have impacts. Ivan, you want to take a minute on that, please?
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm Ivan Marrero. I'm the Division Administrator for the Federal Highway Administration here in Utah. So, yes, we're a federal agency. We are fortunate that our funding comes out of the Highway Trust Fund, so we're not subject to the budget battles that take place in Congress. In the 27 years I've been with Federal Highway, we have never been in furlough or shutdown, so it's very nice. Like Andrew said, we are in business. Federal funds are still coming to the state. We actually allocated the full year's budget to the states this year. Normally it's become the norm. We like to give the states all the funding they can, they are due for the whole year, but with the lack of appropriations at the national level, we've been pretty much handing out little pieces of that budget for the last, I don't know how many years, so the continuing resolution. So this year, we have allocated the funds to the states, the full year amount. We have advised the states to that there is a risk that once an appropriation bill is passed, that there could be a pullback on that money again. So we are advising them to spend the federal funds at the historic levels, not use it all at once, because it could pull back. We just don't know what Congress is going to do. As far as the what else? We are in business. The money's still here. We've heard that even though the funds are still coming, the impact of the shutdown on the highway project is there are some projects being delayed because some of the other agencies that, you know, for a lot of these federal projects you need environmental documents to be completed, you need permits from other agencies, from the quarry, you know, Fish and Wildlife and all that. So with some of those agencies being shut down, some of those permits are not in that process. So some projects are being held back. I don't know that we've had any of that happen in Utah. I haven't heard about any projects being delayed, but other states are claiming that their projects are being delayed because of the lack of permits. So, okay. Be glad to answer any other questions, but that's pretty much what I can provide you with that federal side.
Thanks, Ivan. And the one difference, that's the FHWA, Highway Administration, the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, is in a different boat, right? Because the FTA and the federal transit programs are not funded from the trust fund. They're actually funded from general fund dollars. So there's more interference with the flow of monies there. I think we're all hoping that this situation gets resolved in the near future.
And I'm glad you brought it up, because, you know, FTA and federal highway, one of the things that was approved, the STIP, had they've been shut down. Luckily, that STIP gets approved back in September, but had the shutdown occurred in September, we would not have had FDA to approve that STIP, and that would have been pretty serious. That would have held the whole program in this thing. So, yeah.
Thanks, Ivan. And we have a great federal team from USDOT here with us today and working with us, and they really help us and then, by extension, help you navigate all of these issues. And so, thanks a lot, guys, for that.
We're inviting us to be here.
Hey, thank you, all of you. Appreciate all the work that's going into this. Next, we're to number 5, transportation and land use connection. Today is kind of a big day for that. Today's kind of a key day for that. So the Transportation and Land Use Connection Program is a partnership between WFRC, Salt Lake County, UDOT, UTA, that helps communities advance their planning efforts while also achieving benefits for the entire region. And today we're going to discuss the Governor's Fiscal Year 2020 budget recommendations for statewide technical planning assistance grants, which is similar to the TLC program. And if it passes, it could substantially strengthen the TLC program. So for that, we're going to turn the time back to Andrew.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, I feel like I'm talking too much today. Sorry. I'll be brief here. So our TLC program, the Transportation Land Use Connection Program, was born out of this committee five years ago, I think. Right, Megan? 6 years ago. Because we recognized that local communities were facing these challenges of growth issues and housing and how that ties to transportation. And so we created this program to give assistance, technical assistance, staff assistance at the local community level to tackle these tricky growth issues. And man, when it started 6 years ago, the pressures on growth and housing issues and air quality, I think, have only grown. I'm happy to say that over that 6 year period, the program has also grown. We started it out with funds that come through WFRC. Salt Lake County is a partner. Councilmember Winder Newton has been a great supporter and proponent of this program with Salt Lake County. UDOT and UTA also are putting resources into the program, but the demand exceeds the resources that are available to help the communities. So we were having conversations with many of you and then folks in other areas of the state and with the governor's office, and I'm happy to say that actually led to a proposal to provide additional funding for programs like this in the state. And Evan is the governor's planning director with GOMB, Governor's Office of Management and Budget. Evan, can I turn to you to talk a little bit about the governor's recommendation, please?
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. And everything you said is absolutely correct. We've been very impressed to see the good work that's been happening at WFRC and in this region. And it really has been impressive to see the amount of growth and the growth pressures that are happening throughout this region and throughout the state, as you mentioned. And as we looked at that, we absolutely agree with what you're saying, Andrew. There's really a significant need in these high growth areas, and it's different depending on where you're at. If you're in Sandy, the growth pressure is just as real, but it's much different than if you're on one of these shoulder communities, whether it's Far West, North Ogden, Morgan, somewhere like that. And so we agree that there's definitely a need to continue to increase the resources that are allocated to local governments to make sure that they are able to keep up with the demand. And frankly, there's also a clear state nexus as well. We talk a lot in this meeting about the connection between transportation and land use. And certainly land use is a local government issue. Every community has its own character and values and the way they want to grow. But we also recognize that as a state, that often impacts transportation funding and decisions as well. And so we felt this was a really good way to come in and provide some resources and work together with the local communities to find the best solutions for their communities. And again, very much built off of the model that has been built here at WFRC. And so, one, I applaud this group for the work in putting that together and providing a good model and wanting to continue that legacy and expand it throughout the state. So we're excited. The recommendation was that it go through UDOT because, again, that is really the state's nexus is through the transportation funding. And so Terry and her group will be able to work with the local communities and providing that funding. And I think one of the key goals for us is it would just have to be planning that's related to transportation and reducing trips. Beyond that, there are a lot of different things that can happen, whether it's connectivity, increasing centers, transit-oriented developments, lots of different things that can happen. So we're really excited about it. I know documents like these don't get people excited too often.
Well, some of
this
us.
This excites me. Well, I have to say, Mayor Bigelow, I think he joined me. These are the kind of documents that we live for. But no, it is really exciting. And we're again, the next step is we've got to get this to the legislature, though. So this is the first step in the process. And so we've got this next little more than 45 days to convince the legislature as well that it's a good idea. I would, however, be remiss if I didn't also mention one other recommendation that is very much tied to this. We talked about transportation and how we're talking about growth and this idea that there's also this erosion of quality of life as we're constantly talking about more dense centers and more growth and more development. And there's this feeling that perhaps residents are giving something up. Well, yeah, I guess we'll allow a little bit more density because we've got to have more areas for people to live and more affordable housing, but they feel like they're not getting anything in return. So one other recommendation that I'm very excited about in the governor's budget is $25 million one time for regionally significant parks and open space. And so the idea is for these communities that are really working to accommodate this market-driven growth and plan for it, we want to be able to come in and also provide resources to offset some of that in preserving some of our open spaces and recreation areas. They're going to be continually vital to our quality of life. It's been really impressive to me as I've gone through these past couple of years and all these discussions, and we're talking about really good things, but it's amazing, among all these big issues, things like trails always creep back into it. We've got to keep the quality of life as well. And so that's another one that we really feel goes hand in hand with this recommendation for planning and making sure that we improve quality of life through parks and open space as well. So those are kind of the two big ones that we're going to be pushing, and appreciate your support as well in these items.
Thank you, Evan. And we're going to ask Megan, who is our TLC program manager, to give you a little more discussion about where we're at with TLC. But before you do this, I just want to be really specific about what we're talking about here for an appropriation. The governor, in his budget recommendations, said $2 million of ongoing general fund money that would go to UDOT, and $1 million of one time. So some of you know this well, but it's a very important distinction to talk about what the funding source is. And the fact that it's general funds, that means it would be a new funding source.
It would not be taking money away from something that is currently being funded. So as proposed, it is not saying, hey, UDOT, take money that you're using for projects and move it over and do this. It's new money, so that's important. It's also, it's ongoing, a recommended ongoing appropriation as opposed to one time. Ongoing means, just what it says, that it is in the budget every year. As opposed to you get it once and then who knows what happens in the future, which for these types of efforts is incredibly important. As I imagine Megan will talk about, the nature of these types of this type of work is a community starts with maybe visioning and stakeholder engagement and then goes down the path to the general plan and to site development agreements and to financing strategies. And so the last thing we want, and sort of part of the reason for this program, is to go from vision all the way to implementation, right? Not just have a plan that so-called sits on the shelf. So having that those resources be available, predictable and stable and ongoing is really, really important. And we're talking about this in through the TLC lens because that's what this committee has worked on. But again, I want to emphasize that this is the idea for this is that it is statewide through UDOT to help communities all over the state deal with these challenging growth issues. So with that, Megan?
Yeah, and I want to say it's a good thing this is our last meeting here because I was not leaning on the lights just now. That was purely electrical.
Sure you were.
Yeah, this appropriation would enable our region and the rest of the state to do more of the good planning work that TLC has had the privilege of doing the last 5 years. So much of our planning conversation is centered around the fact that we are growing. Planning is always important, but right now maybe more important than ever. Past decade, Utah added nearly 500,000 people, and the Wasatch Front may be adding the rough equivalent of a Taylorsville or a Bountiful every year for the next 30 years. We led the nation in job growth rate last year at 3.3% and 48,000 jobs. That's a lot of jobs, and those people need a place to live. So we're growing fast, and that comes with a lot of challenges, including housing availability and in turn affordability, a place for those employees to live, poor air quality, traffic congestion and water use, resource usage. And I want to add, the public understands that we're growing. And so Evan, as you said, the understanding of trade-offs, the education, that's more important than ever as well, because as we've seen from surveys that we've been engaged in, people are very aware that we're growing. It's not just a conversation we have in this room. All of these growth challenges are impacted by land use decisions, and they're central to our regional planning, and they're at the forefront of the minds of our community planners, our local elected officials. A lot of the people in this room have an application in today to me, so I know you're all thinking about it too. And on top of all of this, because we're growing, local governments are really busy. Your staff is busy, and growth just makes that even worse. TLC works with communities to tackle these issues in a very direct way. I'm going to read this because it's a lot of words on the slide. The TLC program provides technical assistance to local communities to help them achieve their goals and plan for growth. The program helps communities implement changes to the built environment that reduce traffic on roads, enable more people to easily walk, bike, and use transit. So that's what the TLC program does in a nutshell. Cities work with our partners, Salt Lake County, UTA, UDOT, to come to shared outcomes from the very beginning of the project to the end. Our partners are there. We've done 65 efforts around the region, and they all tackle these growth issues in their own unique way. No project is the same. There's no template. There are templates. They're helpful, but they're not a one-size-fits-all. TLC works to meet communities where they are and then move them through the steps toward implementation. Again, it's catered to each community. TLC funds plans, including visions, community engagement, which is a whole slew of things, really helping the community understand these trade-offs. Downtown master plans, active transportation plans. These plans turn into policies like zoning ordinance, design standards, transportation priorities. And then ultimately, TLC works to help communities implement these things on the ground, products. Maybe that's helping them with financing options, implementation strategies, what are the detailed next steps for community especially if they haven't tackled a lot of these issues before. Different types of RDA support, area master plans, and all these things are influenced by studies and analyses to make these products viable. So I want to tell the story of a couple of communities to show how TLC is helping them move toward implementation through an ongoing use of this resource, the first being Roy. So Roy is largely built out with an aging population, and beginning a couple of years ago came to TLC with some concerns about growth, you know, just challenges, facing some new challenges. And through a thoughtful consideration of alternatives with our program, leadership recognized that alternative developments in certain areas, like around the front support runner station, would benefit them in the long run. Mayor Danbo can tell this story a lot better than I can.
Well, that's and I appreciate that. I will indicate to you, collectively, if you'd like to take it that way, that this has been a success story for Roy City. Let me just make it kind of clear. Roy City, probably his annual budget and what we work with, is probably equivalent to what Salt Lake City uses in terms of getting rid of the solid waste. We do not have the kind of resources that you typically would find in Ogden or a Salt Lake or Van Orem. We just don't have those kind of resources. And yet our needs are not much different than what we'd expect in any city. No better, no worse. But the fact is our people expect us to have, as leaders, to find some progression, future. We just can't afford it. And sometimes it's not even a priority to us because there's so many other demanding issues. I will tell you, and I can speak probably literally for all of us in Roy City, the Wasatch Front Regional Council got this concept coming to us and give us an option to basically team with us to help us see what the future can be. Otherwise, we'd never see it. We just don't have that kind of vision. We don't have that kind of resources. And as a result of that, they kind of give us a little look at it under a concept called Roy, Focus Roy. Ask our citizens what they thought, got them involved, spent a lot of hours with us, and developed a package with us that I can tell you is promising. But the next step was is we need to do something with it. And that's happening today. With some resources, the Wasatch Front has allowed us to tap into. We have hired a contractor, specifically by the name of Landmark Design. They're going to spend the next 4, 6, 8 months with us, and we're going to change the footprint of the future of Roy City as a result. It's incredible. It's exciting. We're going to ask for a lot of involvement from the public to help us make that come to realization. But more importantly, it gives a small city by the name of Roy City an opportunity to see a vision that otherwise we'd never see. So if it's a small city that's in your communities, then I say we really encourage you to tap into this because it's incredible what we can do. But we need your vision. And I think what we have seen from this organization is the fact is they give us an opportunity to try it and work it. And I'll tell you, over the next few months as we start to implement and we start to lay out a general plan amendment, which is where it's going to go, then I will tell you I'd like to share that with you. I'd like to tell you where we've been and where we're going and what the future, in my opinion, of Roy City will look like. And if nothing else, use that as a template as we start to look at ways in the future for other cities like us. Again, we're not Salt Lake City. We're Roy City. But our vision is equally as important, okay? And we are excited about the opportunities we've been given here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. And what Mayor Danbo alluded to, this project we're kicking off now, is moving from plan to policy, you know, taking that Focus Roy plan we did with all of that engagement and getting it on the books as policy for Roy City as they move forward. Another city that's moving through our next steps from policy to products, the City of South Salt Lake adopted the TLC goals really early on. From our very first year, they've been moving their plans forward for their downtown. At the center of the region's transportation facilities, they have a lot of their own growth challenges, and they've been able to take their downtown plan, turn that into zoning, into a form-based code that really sets them up for good quality development, and now we're seeing products on the ground. They created a market using TLC, and they've seen visible change. There's over 2,600 housing units, most of which are mixed use. They have, you know, commercial components, retail, office. There's about 800 on the way in the pipeline. And these are, you know, these are along the S line. They're rich in amenities. for both residents and employees, everybody who comes through South Salt Lake on their regional transportation facilities. And they're seeing quality construction and a growing service base. So South Salt Lake has really created a sustainable downtown through the program.
Okay, and on that point, they have a form-based code zoning for this area that's being shown that Megan actually wrote, didn't you, Megan?
Yes, with help.
Yes.
Not on my own, it's all the city. So sometimes we have the opportunity as a TLC team to work with you a little more on each of these projects, and then we actually end up doing the fun planning stuff right here in this office and bringing it back to you, and we get to be your consultants, which is really fun for us. And we get to spend a lot of time with your communities and get to know them well. I bought a house about right there because I love this community so much. So yeah, this is a really great program to work on. So these projects are all made possible through our partnership. Our funding has over doubled since our inception in 2014, as has our demand. Demand for 2019, we're getting applications today, so I can only speak for the letters of intent, but it's more than doubled as well since 2014, which just tells us even more that we need more resources for this program to keep doing this good planning work. Again, the program success just indicates that more resources are needed. This is to keep doing the good work we're doing, as well as new opportunities for TLC to support you. This includes work like with SB 136, maximizing the value of infrastructure investments, helping your communities coordinate land use and transportation, which is incentivized by the bill. Utilizing innovative financing strategies such as TRZs, transportation reinvestment zones. Similar to a CRA, this is a new tool available to your cities, and TLC can help you tap into that. Opportunity to provide more support toward the product phase, so more market analysis to see what's possible on the ground. That's changing every day. There are experts available to us here locally that can help you figure that out. You know, what would a developer do tomorrow? What might they do if you make a few changes in your ordinances, in your policies? All of these things are needed here in our region as well as statewide. We're pretty certain of that.
So this Megan, can I just interject really quick? I think anybody that works a lot in community and economic development knows that there's so many places along that path from vision to construction where something can fall apart. And often it's very late in that process, in those implementation stages. And that's where we think that there is a lot more demand that local governments would like help to iron out those last little hurdles that can often cause something to fall apart or can enable something to happen.
Definitely. So as Andrew said, the state of proposed appropriations, $2 million ongoing statewide out of general funds that would be funneled through UDOT and MPOs and RPOs. And this legislation is beginning with the IGG Appropriations Committee, the Infrastructure and General Government Appropriations Committee. The success that we've seen in our 6 years as a program, administering this program, affirms that the statewide need is there. And here are all of our partners, the proponents of this. And we like to, I'm speaking for a lot of communities as the local governments throughout the region, but they speak to us in the applications that we get.
I just have one question, particularly with Mary Dandoy. Mary Dandoy, before you leave, when you went through this process, did you end up with more high-density housing, do you think, than you would have had otherwise?
Yeah, that's a good question. First, I shall indicate to you, not untypical of our city council. It's probably not untypical you find from small cities. There's really an intent, and I think a large part because of ignorance, to try to hold back growth. They don't allow high density. High density is almost like a four-letter word in some circles. And I think it's because they just don't understand it. They don't understand that we need to plan growth, not react to growth. And I think in the past, we've done just that. Somebody comes in and says, we're going to do this, we want to do that. And we say, no, we're not going to let you do that. And so what we're trying to do is plan for that growth, recognizing the fact is on the Wasatch Front over the next 30 years, our population is going to double. And if we are not going to get too much further out to the west before we run into lakes and run into some other places, then we got to go vertical. So how do we do that? And what we're trying to do is educate them with that. And more importantly, if I could be very blunt, is we're asking our leaders who are making those decisions to ask the hard questions to the younger people who will be occupying those places. What they're hearing, particularly from millennials, is the fact is, I don't want my half acre spread of grass to mow. Give me a townhouse where I can basically be able to move around and do the things that they really like to do. And that's a shift in generation with us. We've got these nice large acres and lots of grass. Surprisingly, not everybody wants that. And yet our city, even though we're almost built out, has to accommodate even the younger generation, as well as the olders, who simply says, I want to sell my old place. I want to give myself a patio home. So we're taking a real serious look in terms of providing a need to all of those. But I will tell you today, high density housing is really difficult for some people in our councils who are making these decisions because they don't understand it. And we're trying to educate them on what the possibilities are. And that's the reason why we're excited about this change. We're going to hit not only our high density issues, but we're also going to talk about economical development opportunities within our main business districts, redevelopment, because those are already existing. And I think this is what we're going to gain from this. And more importantly, if I can be blunt, is that we're going to ask the population to be actively engaged in that decision. Not just five council members, but more importantly, what do they think? And I think we're going to get some real eye-opening to that process. So we're excited. It's going to be hard for change, but I'll tell you, things that don't remain the same, okay? Things that don't change do remain the same. And we cannot stay the same. I think we have to progress, and we're pushing for that progression. I'm excited.
I think as we're dealing with increasing housing and high-density housing, it's something, as we went through a planning process in our community, I think you will see, and this will be very helpful, there are problem communities out there. But if we can get them to go through programs such as this, I think you'll see more high-density housing that I think is beneficial to us. And so I think this is a great program. And we maybe need to start reaching out to some communities that don't necessarily have plans and aren't looking at the high-density options, but they should be.
We'll look forward to hearing how things continue to go. We'll keep you posted.
And by the way, we're introducing a new word to our council. It's called mixed use and form-based codes. These are incredible tools that they never heard of. Education is critical. We're making that happen. Okay?
I'm going to tell a quick story down while you're on the way out. So the meeting where we reviewed this focus road plan, it was like, why did we do this sooner? Like, we've been telling you this. There's a couple of planning commissioners that were like, we've been telling you to do this for years. And it was a really fun meeting because it was kind of the I told you so meeting. It was it was a fun plan to work with Roy on.
I was just wondering if there's been much in the way of inquiries regarding opportunity zones and integrating those with the CRAs, the transportation zones, and using all of their resources.
That's something we're really engaged in as an organization. We don't have any, you know, projects coming our way as of yet, but those have been, that has been a component of a few projects where we're looking. I mean, it's a relatively new for some of the projects that we're working on, but they overlap a bit. So including that as part of our plans, we could absolutely be a resource to any community that wanted to look into that further. We definitely respond to the asks of the communities, but absolutely.
What Commissioner Scott is referring to, as many of you know, is the provision in the recent federal tax reform bill called Opportunity Zones, which creates federal tax incentives for long-held investment in lower-income communities. And there's a lot of areas that are Opportunity Zones in the Wasatch Front and in designated Opportunity Zones in the Wasatch Front and in the state of Utah. And the ability to use TRZs or Opportunity Zones or other financing strategies, that's one of the things that we see as one of the growth areas for TLC program, is that last hurdle of how do you actually finance, get financed and build the things that a community wants. And that we have consultants on in our pool already, financial advisors like Zions Bank and others that can help communities. We can bring that through the TLC program to help design the financing package to turn plan into reality.
That's great. Thank you. Any other questions?
I don't even know if this is appropriate or not, but it bugs me a little bit. That is, your markers for quality of life issues, Are they unanimously accepted by all communities of equal size, or is there some communities that the quality of life marker, some of them are not as important to them as others? Mm-hmm. So when you do this planning, is it universal, the markers?
No.
And
no.
Who decides what markers are being used then?
So the initial goals of the community is universal. Is that what you mean? Like what they're starting with?
Yeah, what they hold near and dear for the design of their community.
Absolutely not. No, I mean each community is so unique in what they come to us and what they need our help with. And sometimes it's very aligned between leadership and the community and staff, and sometimes it's not. I think we start from all over the place, and that's really what we hope to do, is just meet communities wherever they are. I think the goals you see coming out of plans are often really similar, especially if you've done a good planning process, because they start to catch all of these things. You get enough community members in the room, you start to see these Wasatch Choice goals, these Wasatch Choice principles, they all rise to the top. But I would say that where communities are starting and what they hold dear to them is never quite the same from city to city, and that's part of the beauty of that. All of our communities are so different.
I just know that cowboys like the horse in the back fence. The neighbor next door don't like horses.
I think actually that speaks to the importance of the program, is that not all communities are the same, and if the state wants to help everybody plan better for transportation systems, they can't. Everybody struggles for a one-size-fits-all in terms of what's the best way to have your land use. This program allows you to look very site-specific, and I think that's the value of it, is the state wants to support good planning as it relates to transportation, but you sometimes almost all the time have to go to the specific level to get it right, and I think it's exactly why this is so important. Because it allows you to go to a community and figure out what's important there, how you can use the tools best.
I know you're right, because I can remember the mayor said, I don't want anything to do with this planning. I don't like where you're going with it. They were afraid they're going to be made to go and do something they didn't want to do in their community.
Can I make one quick just clarification about this program? The entire thing, top to bottom, is locally driven. So if local government's applying for projects they want to do, picking the consultants, working out the scope, approving what they want to approve. So everything from top to bottom is locally driven. What we do is we help them achieve what they want to achieve. But the funding goes to those applications that also have other regional benefits.
Anyone else?
Thank you.
Good luck today.
We already have so many. We're doing well.
Good. Okay, and thank you for that. Appreciate it. Okay, number six on our agenda is the UTA Service Choices effort. Excited to hear about this. We have Laura Hansen here, who's going to outline the effort for this future of the UTA bus system and how things are going to work. So take it.
Thank you. And I set myself a timer for 10 minutes, so I'm going to try and roll through this. So I wanted to share with you kind of three different chunks of information. One is a little bit about sort of UTA's philosophy towards transit service planning. I've been there about a year and a half now, and we're trying to kind of shake things up a little bit. The second piece would be, and this really tees off of Macon's presentation, how you all can help us as local governments. And then the third piece is an exciting new project that we've got kicking off here this month. So UTA has a whole variety of different modes within our portfolio, from buses to trains to van pools. And there are a lot of new technologies that are emerging. We have electric scooters, we have bike sharing, there's Uber and Lyft ride hailing services. There's even something called mobility as a service, which is the idea of having sort of it's kind of like a cable subscription package that you sign up for that gives you a certain number of credits that you can use for any sort of mode. And so that's something else that we're exploring. So this opens up a lot of opportunities for partnerships for us and a lot of different tools in our toolbox. So what is our philosophy towards urban planning or towards transit planning, which is really, again, helping you accomplish your goals. So maybe your community has a desire to create a really urban feel. I know West Valley City and South Salt Lake are doing some of these things where they're trying to create the opportunity for people to make lifestyle choices around the fact that transit is available, and maybe they don't need to own a car. Or maybe your goals for your community are to retain kind of the suburban neighborhood feel, and urban transportation solutions don't really fit into your community's vision. Maybe your community is really interested in stimulating new economic development in your community, and transit might be a catalyst for that. Or maybe you want to retain the current community feel and character of your neighborhood, and you're really more interested in just having opportunities for your residents to connect to the larger region, to access jobs and education, various different things like that. Similarly, maybe you're interested in commuter services. Box Elder and Tooele both, I think, are really interested in future solutions that allow their communities to access the larger region. There are a lot of commuter traffic. Or maybe your interest is more local circulation within your community and allowing your residents to move around to the places they need to go within the community itself. So we want to work with you to accomplish your goals. Here are some things that you can do to help us, and the TLC program is a great way to accomplish this. There are some factors that play into whether transit is successful. The first is density. How many people are near transit? That could be jobs or housing. The more people we have near transit, the more ridership we're going to have. How far away are destinations? If you have lots of different destinations all together, it's easier to create successful transit that has high ridership. If there are long distances in between those destinations, we have long periods where there's not a lot of ridership. The street network has a huge contributing factor here as well. The more intersections that you have makes it more walkable. So somebody who lives, I don't know if this has a pointer, somebody who lives right here can access this bus stop really easily by a variety of different modes. If somebody lives right here and they want to go to the bus stop, they have to go up, over, down, and it's a much longer walk. So the street network has a lot to do with this. Another thing is really just the geometry of the way you lay your cities out. If we can create linear corridors, it's much, much easier to link them with transit than to have to do these big diversions out of the way to pick up riders at key destinations. So those are some things that you can all do. If you think about what creates a successful transit system, there are really sort of three key elements. There's the transit service, that is how frequent it comes. What hours does it operate? Do we have a friendly driver? The cleanliness of the vehicle, is it reliable? Those are all things that UTA can control. The supportive land use and the connected street network are squarely within the responsibilities of the local governments. So you really control 2/3 of what makes for a successful transit system. So we need to partner on this, I think, is the key goal. And there's lots of opportunities. This grant program is a phenomenal way to bring us all together and to help accomplish our goals together. So we have a new project coming up. We're calling it the UTA Service Choices Project. And in large part, this is a community engagement process. We want you all and all of the other cities within our service area to help us prioritize how resources should be distributed. We have both existing resources that are on the ground, and then we have new resources that are coming with these additional sales tax increases. We want to respond to your goals, and we want to result in really data-driven decisions. So one way we're doing this is asking the community to participate in a survey and some workshops that answer a question. As UTA, we're often given sort of conflicting direction. We're told, operate more like a business, get as many people as you can on a bus, but at the same time, my community over here needs service too. We pay taxes, we need service also. So here's an example, an illustration of that conflict. Imagine this is a fictional town. We have 18 buses we can deploy in this town. Every little dot on that represents either a household or a job. So you can see the key density, the core density is aligned along these two main corridors. So if we want to maximize ridership, this is what our transit network will look like. We've put all 18 buses on those two corridors. Because we've concentrated on them on these corridors, we can operate frequently, maybe every 15 minutes or better. It runs 7 days a week. It starts earlier, it runs late. It's reliable, and so people can make lifestyle choices based on this, and it provides maximum competition with the private vehicle. That works great in a lot of ways, right? But what about Mrs. Jones, who lives right over here in this corner? Maybe she says she's in a wheelchair and she needs to get to doctor's appointments or to her job or to education. Or maybe it's just somebody who says, hey, you know what? I pay taxes. I want transit to serve me and be an option for me as well. So then we look at a coverage model. And we take those same 18 buses and we deploy them all throughout the community. We're spreading them out. We're serving Mrs. Jones over here. She's got a bus route now that comes right in front of her. But because we've spread those resources out, we're also spreading them thin. And that means that the bus may not come every 15 minutes. It might be more every hour. Maybe it only operates during the peak rush hour time periods in the morning and the evening. Maybe only runs Monday through Friday. We only have a certain number of resources, and so when we spread it out, the quality of the transit service goes down to some degree. So I want to highlight here that there is no right or wrong answer to this question. This is purely a value-based decision. And largely your response to this depends on where you live, right? I don't know that anybody can argue with access for everyone or service to everyone that pays taxes. That seems like something that we can all agree to. Somebody also, I don't think, would have a hard time arguing on putting transit service where it's most likely to be successful. Both of these are great perspectives, they're important perspectives, but they lead us in opposite directions from a transit planning perspective. So fortunately, it's not a binary choice. We have the ability to choose some point on the spectrum. Just for your own frame of reference, within the Salt Lake County, Weber and Davis area, the ridership is, or the split here is about 60% ridership, 40% coverage. Box Elder and Tooele are largely coverage services at this point, almost 100% coverage. And then in Utah County, it's almost just the reverse. It is 40% ridership and 60% coverage. So a little bit different. I said that backwards. Davis and Weber are 40% coverage, 60% ridership. Salt Lake and Utah counties are 60% ridership, 40% coverage. That's confusing, sorry. But we're lucky that we get to choose a point on the spectrum here. So it's not an either or. So the question we'll be asking the community is, with existing resources, how should we allocate our bus service and our transit service among these two competing goals? And then, setting aside our existing resources, what should we do with new resources as they become available? How should we program those resources? So we have an engagement process starting up in February. It will run through April. We will be having an online survey that we would like all of your help with in distributing and sharing among all of your networks, making sure as many people as possible participate in this. We'll be having some community open houses, and our goal is to co-host those with you. Similar to the Wasatch Choice 2050 workshops, where we have sort of sub-regional, you know, a couple different cities get together, we hold a workshop. We'd love to do something like that as well, and my timer just went off, so I'm right on time. We'd love your help with that. And then we'll be having three community leader workshops. And the goal for these workshops is not necessarily to get the city planners and elected officials there, but more the riders in the community and the people who are not riding transit but maybe have a desire to, and ask them, what do you want to see for your transit in your region? What is the role that you want UTA to play? Based on the outcome of this, and this is our consultant here, Jarrett Walker, and I also want to give a big shout out to Wasatch Front Regional Council, as well as UDOT and Mountainlands AOG, who's not here because they are all helping jointly fund this study. So we're working together. We've hired Jarrett Walker, who's a little bit of a rock star in the transit planning world, to come lead us through this exercise, and we're really excited about where we go. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm excited to see how this feedback comes in and really great, great stakeholders come to the table, all the public. But I love that you're the way you're doing it. I think it's great. I look forward to seeing how this all plays out. Thank you. Okay, we've made it to number 7. Is there any other business
for this regional growth committee at this time? Anything anybody has?
You know, I wasn't to bring this up, but we have a slide to show the inland port, and then Terry mentioned quality of life. And we've got an issue brewing in South Davis County with the Legacy Parkway and the truck lane. And I think that's the leading edge of an issue of quality of life, because the Legacy Parkway was built out of a compromise. And the parkway was built, and it became an asset for our communities in South Davis County because of the way it was built. And now that the truck ban is going off, we're going to lose part of that. And then with the work of the legislature with the inland port, things I see is that will soon become a truck route out of the port. And so we want to raise the issue, is it really worth it to us as a state to build an inland port, create all this economic development, and destroy our communities? And I think we need to have that discussion. And so this is the leading edge of that discussion. And would like to engage our legislators in that discussion, and instead of implementing a 20th century solution to a 21st century problem, look at maybe other ways that we can solve some of these things. I don't have the answers right now, but I think what we're doing is we're having the leading edge of the discussion. Quality of life versus economic development, I guess. So stay tuned, that's where we're headed.
I'll just note really, really quickly that I know that in the Inland Port Authority process that they're going to explore scenarios for how that unfolds, and I think there's a lot of policy levers that could be looked at, including perhaps, not sure, but perhaps including, does the truck ban stay in place or not?
Right.
So I think there's a lot of options that can be explored, and with a look at what is the impact on quality of life.
Great, and we just want to engage in that discussion.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. I'm going to turn some time over to Ted.
Yes, thank you.
Tell us about the new building and where we go next.
Mayor Ramsey, you bet. So we are going to move in March.
Hooray.
And we would like to have our next. We're really keeping our fingers crossed. We're 99% sure that our next meeting on March 22nd will be in the new space. But the main thing I want to note is that the council meeting on March 28th will be also double duty. It will be the celebration of Wasatch Front Regional Council's 50th anniversary. So if you want to come to the council meeting, great. But if you want to show up right after that, we're going to have an open house and a great celebration of that, both that key milestone and a tour of our new space. And so please come out and experience that and celebrate with us. And I don't know if Andrew or anybody else wants to add on to that.
Amen.
We're not excited or anything.
Where's the new space at?
It's at the Gateway complex on Ford West in Salt Lake City, just a couple hundred feet south of the North Temple Front Runner Station. So easy place to get to by car, transit, bike share, etc.
Parking? So next month you'll be there?
And we will have parking available too, certainly.
We're gonna move early March.
Early March.
Yes.
Get through the legislature first, then.
We're going to move the last week of the legislative session. Because why not? Why not?
Nothing's happening.
No, right?
Some people are gluttons for punishment.
Yeah, right.
So we wish you the best. If we all get an email saying, can you come with your trucks and your moving shoes and your whatever, we'll know. Yeah.
Now you're talking.
Bring in the troops, right?
Come on.
Okay. The last item on our agenda, number 8. Is probably not going to be news to any of you. The Utah Open and Public Meetings Act. As most of you know, Wasatch Front Regional Council practices compliance by showing a short little video about the Utah Public Open Meetings Act. There are several of us who will have that in a lot of different arenas, right? But we are required to show it, and we would invite you to stay to watch it. If this is the only organization, which you will have this training in this year. We especially ask that you watch it, and if you'll get this somewhere else, we understand if you want to get out. But I need to get a motion to adjourn before we start the video, and the adjournment would take place at the end of the video.
I move to adjourn.
There's a motion and a second. Okay, all in favor of adjourning at the end of the video, please say aye.
Aye.
We'll adjourn at the end of the video. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you in March. And I hope when we come on the 28th, there's at least like cake or something. I mean, a 50th anniversary is a big deal.
There'll be something. I'm looking at Heather. Yeah, right. And Katie. See, there you go. There you got your endorsement. There you go.
Put that in the invitation.
Thank you.
In this video, we are going to discuss the basic closed meeting. portion of the meeting must be recorded, and detailed written minutes may be kept. Both the recording and written minutes of a closed meeting are considered protected records. The governing body may call an emergency meeting to discuss an urgent matter due to unforeseen circumstances. In order to hold an emergency meeting, 1, best notice practical of the time, location, and topics to be considered must be given. 2, an attempt to contact all governing body members must be made. And 3, a majority of the governing body members must approve the meeting. The Open and Public Meetings Act imposes certain notice requirements on local government entities. Entities that hold regular meetings, which are scheduled in advance over the course of a year, need to give public notice at least once a year of their meeting schedule. This notice must include the date, time, and place of the meetings. For entities that do not hold regular meetings, the governing body must give at least 24 hours of public notice specifying the date, time, and place.
Well, 15 years goes by.
All meetings, whether regularly scheduled in advance over the course of a year, or scheduled as needed, must provide no less than 24 hours notice of meeting agendas. The method of providing public notice for meetings and agendas depends upon whether a public hearing will be held during a portion of the meeting. It is important to distinguish between notice requirements for regular meetings and notice requirements for a meeting that will include a public hearing. If a public hearing is going to be held, the notice must be published in at least one issue of the newspaper. If a newspaper of general circulation is not available, then written notice should be posted in 3 public places within the entity's boundaries. For regular meetings, an entity is only required to notify a local media correspondent and does not need to pay for the notice if the newspaper chooses not to publish it. Additionally, for public hearings, notice generally must be given at least 7 days prior to the meeting. Both regular meetings and public hearings, written notice must be posted at the principal office of the governing body, or, if no such office exists, at the location where the meeting is to be held. Governing bodies are required to post notice of a public meeting on the Utah Public News website. By posting on the website and providing the email of the newspaper or local media correspondent, governing bodies meet the requirement to notify a newspaper or local media correspondent. However, all other notice requirements for a public hearing, such as publishing notices in a newspaper, still apply. Typically, posting on the Utah Public Notice website is done by a clerk or secretary. However, it is the responsibility of the governing body to ensure this requirement is being properly met. The public notice website is administered by Utah State Archives, who has prepared a training manual and quick guide for owners and posters, as well as training sessions that may be accessed on their website at archives.utah.gov. Public meeting agendas must include the following: topics to be considered, reasonably specified, and each topic listed under an agenda item on the meeting agenda. The governing body may not consider a topic in an open meeting that was not on the agenda. If a new topic that was not on the agenda is raised by the public during an open meeting, the governing body may discuss the topic. However, final action may not be taken on the new topic during that meeting. If your entity is increasing a fee or undergoing increase in taxation, please be aware that there are additional notice and posting requirements. For all of these areas, please carefully study applicable laws or consult with your legal advisor. In addition to notice requirements, the Open and Public Meetings Act imposes certain requirements on the information that must be recorded during the meeting and shared afterward with the public. Meeting minutes and an audio recording need to be kept for all open meetings with limited exceptions. When a meeting, whether open or closed,
is required to be recorded. The recording must be complete and unedited. It must include all portions of the meeting, from the commencement through the adjournment. Recordings of open meetings must be made available to the public for listening within 3 days of the meeting. Every entity needs to establish and implement procedures for the governing body's approval of the written minutes of each meeting. Pending minutes are written minutes of an open meeting that have been prepared in draft form and are subject to change before being approved by the governing body. Pending minutes must contain a clear indication, such as a draft or pending watermark, that the governing body has not yet approved the minutes, or that the minutes are subject to change until they have been approved. After holding an open meeting, an entity must make the pending meeting minutes available to the public within 30 days. Approved minutes are written minutes of an open meeting that have been approved by the governing body. Approved minutes of an open meeting are the official record of the meeting and must be made available to the public within 3 business days. Whoever is responsible for taking the minutes during meetings needs to be familiar with what the Utah Open Public Meetings Act requires be contained in the minutes. When a governing body closes a meeting, the following must be publicly announced and entered into the minutes of the open meeting in which the closed meeting was approved, the reason or reasons for holding the closed meeting, the location where the closed meeting will be held, and the vote of each member of the governing body, either for or against the motion to go into closed session. The recording and any written minutes of the closed meeting can include the date, time, and location of the meeting, the names of the governing body's members present and absent, and the names of all others present, except for their disclosure, would infringe upon the confidentiality necessary to fulfill the original purpose of closing the meeting.
Yeah.
Great job. You've now finished the Open and Public Meetings Act video. You're ready to move on to the video evaluation.
Yes, it is.